In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel, where I get to hang out with some friends and talk about characters who don't get a lot of focus normally. Today, we are here to talk about a character you hate. Everyone hates this guy. If you like this guy, there's something wrong with you. We're going to talk about Dr. Abraham Cornelius, and I'm thrilled to be joined by the co-hosts of the incredibly lovely podcast Escape the Mojoverse. Let me have you both introduce yourselves a little bit. Often, I let my guests choose their character. You guys were gracious enough to just agree to do this guy with me. So I know this probably wasn't your top choice, but I'd love to hear your early thoughts on Dr. Abraham Cornelius and or the Weapon X project. Let's begin with Allison Parent. Allison, welcome to Gray Malkin Lane.
Hi, thank you so much for having us. I'm Allison, and I really have not read any of Weapon X before, so this was kind of my introduction to it. Yeah, this guy sucks. This guy really said, what if I came with a shirt that was like Abraham Cornelius's number one fan and I just like fought for him the whole time?
Number one and only fan.
Number one and only fan.
The best part of this guy is his name. Abraham Cornelius is an amazing name.
He has a name and he has a mustache and that's all he's got.
And let me also welcome Matt Parent to the show. Hi, Matt.
Hi, I'm Matt Parent. I use they, them pronouns. And Abraham Cornelius is the only character that makes Sabretooth a protagonist character ever. He's the only one that, like, you can, on some, he does horrible, horrible things. You don't defend Sabretooth. But, like, in escaping from this person and in dealing with this person, yeah, mess him up, always.
But Sabretooth's cool. This guy's not.
That's exactly right. Style matters a lot in comics.
That's exactly what Abraham Cornelius's problem is that there's villains in X-Men. There's villains that are super cool that eventually just become protagonists because they're so cool. This is the least cool guy I've ever read in a comic book.
Yeah, just a truly reprehensible person. Kind of just want to call him like corny. Would you guys just share with our listeners a little bit about yourselves? Share a little of your origin story as comic fans and tell everybody a little about your show. It's fun to have some new lovely voices on the podcast sex scene in the like little X-Men corner of the world that we occupy here.
I've been a big fan of the X-Men for a really long time. My dad had this huge collection that he bestowed upon me that's in my house right now. Huge bins that I've slowly just put back, like put together of like comic, the X-Men run from 94. I don't have giant size. I have like 94 or 95 all the way to 387. The X-Men were really like important to me in like the way that I like learned how to read and like the way that I like got into fantasy and science fiction. And like, it was also, you know, really good for me as like as a queer person to like see these different odd weirdos that everybody was sort of against, but they were sort of like this struggling family of people.
Who doesn't love a hot weirdo?
And they're all hot. That's definitely the big one.
I like that the X-Men fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Escape the Mojoverse is Matt got into the X-Men again. They got really into X-Men and then they kept wanting to tell me about it. They kept wanting to explain all of these stories that I was like, I'm not an auditory person. I'm very much a visual person. I gotta see it. And so I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then finally they were like, what if we did a podcast because I'm gonna tell you all this stuff anyway. And I was like, you know what? Perfect. I did not really read comics as a child. I was much more of a library kid. I liked books, but I'm also really like fan fiction. And I think there's something very similar about comic books and fan fiction and that it's the story that's being passed from hand to hand. And there's different iterations of people and like, oh, this is their take on this character. This is their take on this setting. And that's what I really find appealing and how sometimes you find a comic that just really resonates with you and like really explores this corner of the human psyche. I really enjoy that. Now, I have barely skimmed the surface of comics, but I'm very excited to kind of delve in. And Escape the Mojoverse is kind of me being dragged through comic books, but in a good way, in a good way.
When I started my show, there was just this landscape of X-Men podcasts out there. And so, you know, where is my voice? Where's my unique take? Where do I fit into this? And then suddenly you realize there's this whole kind of subculture and you start making friends and then you hang out in real life and like the friendships are super real. And it's really lovely. I hope to see you guys at some of the con circuit this year. There's some really fun groups and gatherings out there. Your story is a little akin to my dear friends Justin and Alicia Wilder from over on the Ex-Wife podcast, right? Where they say X as in X-Men, not as in former wife, in all of their introductions. You guys should definitely hang out with them too. They're
Definitely.
really lovely. Wolverine, we've been covering on my show in just a little bit of detail as we go because we've been doing some of the early stuff, right? We saw him in First X-Men and we did Origins with Paul Jenkins, but now he's officially debuted in 1974 in the Incredible Hulk stuff that we covered at the end of 2024 on my show. He then joins the team in 2025. In his first appearance, he is called Weapon X. He is taken by Canada and like dropped in to fight the Hulk. And then in Giant Size X-Men number one, Professor X comes to liberate Logan from the Canadian government. That story gets expanded on where when Xavier goes up to Canada to recruit Wolverine, the scene that's added there as a retcon is that Wolverine has to kill like a bunch of soldiers on the way out because they put a collar on Professor X and try to capture him. And so there's a scene of like Wolverine sitting on top of a pile of corpses, and Xavier's like, "Yeah, buddy, come with me." Later, we go into a few years. Claremont sends Alpha Flight after Wolverine in the X-Men comic to try to get him back. And it's the big trope for a long time that Wolverine's the guy that has no memory, right? He doesn't remember his real name, only that he's Logan. Which, when we're analyzing the early 70s comics, it's interesting because we're looking at the trope of like Vietnam and like the soldier coming home with PTSD and not having access to their memories. It's very Rambo. It's very, "I'm the rough, tough guy who came home from war and don't mess with me. I just want to strap a baby to my back and live a peaceful life." We play this up with like old man Logan and in so many different ways with this character over the years, but he was always that lonely soldier. It wasn't until the late 80s when they really started fleshing out what Weapon X is. Now, Claremont played up on this a little bit in his book, and then Larry Hama took over the Wolverine main title, where he added a lot of context, and it became a thing for a really long time to kind of weave characters in and out of the Weapon X narrative. There's the stories where we go back and like Wolverine was a ninja in Japan in the 1400s, but also he was a soldier. I'm making up the years here, but also he was a soldier in World War I, but also he this, and we would add these things, and it became the job of the fan for a long time to really delve in and try to keep track of everything until the early 2000s, where he gets all his memories back after House of M. I'm weaving a lot of continuity together here very quickly. But the trope of Wolverine as the soldier also falls into another style of kind of soldier mentality or genre of fiction, I suppose. If you guys have ever seen like The Manchurian Candidate, it's the idea of the sleeper agent. We put the code in your brain, and when I say Rumpelstiltskin, you go crazy and murder everybody in front of you, and then when I snap my fingers, you don't remember ever having done it. And that's another huge thing with soldiers and people with PTSD because they don't remember what they did. It's like a trauma episode almost to look back. So Wolverine's relationship with the Weapon X project was that. It was the big giant mystery for so long until they finally played out what happened to him in the Weapon X project, which is where Dr. fucking Abraham Cornelius comes in.
I love all of the Weapon X characters. I think the messier that gets, the better it is for me. Near the end of this episode, I will probably have to admit something that it's probably better I just get ahead of now, that I kind of like Romulus. And I only realized that going through the notes, that when I saw that moment, I was like, that's kind of fun. I kind of like this. It's gonzo, it's weird, it's very like brutal.
Romulus for sure will get one of these character episodes one day. One day.
Good. I think sometimes comics and the X-Men, since they're so big, struggle to have like themes that can like tie to a specific character, right? Scott Summers has gone through so many different eras, and his story has like narrative beats that track all the way from the 60s to now. But like it, you know, his journey is a different thing. Logan's story is always about the wilderness and society, being from the wild and at wanting to be part of the real, like our world, and the oppression of society.
Logan is very much about the man of two worlds, right? It's the wild versus civilization, but it's also the good versus evil, the man versus beast, the civilized man versus the soldier, right? The family man versus the man of violence. I think there's always that juxtaposition that we're exploring with his two sides. Sabretooth is what it looks like when it goes wrong, right?
Absolutely. But they conflate those two things too, where it's like society and wilderness equals evil and good. And the best stories, I think, about Wolverine go into how that's not necessarily true. Like how his wild side is not necessarily the evil side of Wolverine, and how the civilized side, that the like the oppressed civilized Wolverine, is not necessarily the best version of him. He is obviously, he didn't want to be a killer. He says as much constantly, but the ways that they've gone to like change him are it's a lab, it's a laboratory, it's the government, it's these things that are big organizational, like you will be part of the world,
which we see played up with like Laura Kinney in an even more tragic way, because Laura starts out as a little kid in all of this, right?
Way more
that there's like two halves fighting each other, that different lives you have to live, just like Hannah Montana.
Excellent. Wolverine, Hannah Montana makes me happy.
Is it the best of both worlds, or is it the worst of both worlds?
The worst of both worlds.
I think there's some very basic things that make Wolverine awesome. I like that he's short. I like that he's hairy. And I like that he fucks. There's just like, the MCU is just so sanitized a lot of things that whenever I read X-Men, I'm like, hell yeah, they're fucking. It's great. What I really liked about this is that even of the parts that I read for this specifically talking about Abraham Cornelius is that like, he does have a moral code even when he is like a pure animal. Like he doesn't like, there's a point where like Hines is like, oh, just kill me fast. And he chooses not to. And I like the whole like beast versus man aspect of him. And I also like that he's just kind of like, fuck off, I'm gonna smoke a cigar. I think that's fun.
Okay, the other huge piece is this Weapon X idea. And we will eventually do, you know, and sometimes instead of the trials on my show, we'll do like an about episode. We just did about Krakoa. One day we will do an about Weapon X thing, but I'm not in a hurry. We're taking a slow ride. Weapon X is a really complicated thing because it's the government program. It is the evil scientists trying to make weapons for the United States by enhancing man. And it's, you know, it's the Cold War because we're racing against every other government. Weapon X has its roots way back in World War II, where the whole Abraham Erskine, all that crazy stuff with Captain America's origins and the Nazis shot him, but there was only one perfect soldier. But a bunch of other soldiers they tried to experiment on. The Super Soldier Serum is the attempt to reinvent it multiple times over the years, which results in other characters getting superpowers like Man-Thing and Luke Cage. So all of these characters are tangentially connected to the Weapon X program. Now, Weapon X is sometimes called Weapon 10, the X being the Roman numeral for 10, and it's sometimes called Weapon Plus because when you turn the X on its side, it makes a plus. And all of these do different things, and there's so much mythology in Marvel Comics about it. Captain America is technically considered Weapon 1. Weapon 2, and I'll be brief here, we'll review these another time. There's a Grant Morrison story that ties in Weapon 2 to animal experimentation, and there's like a little squirrel with claws and like a Weapon X helmet who comes out of this program. It also ties to the characters Brute Force, who were an old like 90s Marvel like animal Transformers band that are like tied to Weapon X because of this. It goes on to create a bunch of really odd characters that are thrown in all over the place. One of them is the Skinless Man. One of them is Dr. Mindbubble. There's a thing called Project Sulfur. When we start to get into the weapon, to the Vietnam stuff, the character Nuke is Frank Simpson, who's like got an American flag on his face, and they like amp him up with like red pills and take him down with blue pills, and he's this crazy version of like the uninhibited soldier. So it really goes on from there, leading up to characters like Phantom X and The World, and even the Stepford Cuckoos being connected here. The World is now this like place of super hyper evolution where every weapons keep coming out of it hyper evolved, and this is where we have characters like the Automaton and All God, and Weapon Minus I think is in there. We have Weapon H, who's like the Hulk Wolverine or Hulk Verine character that is tied to this, and most recently we have Project Hellfire, which is resulting in the new Hellverine stuff where we're like bonding demons to Wolverine to keep that going. So Weapon X is a longer conversation obviously, but the version we're going to jump into got its start in World War II, and now we have Cornelius as like the scientist helping to run it during the pre-X-Men history when Wolverine gets involved. I do a pretty good job at keeping continuity succinct, but this one's complicated. It's a rough thing to try to sum up Weapon X in a paragraph.
I think what I like most about the Weapon X program is that it seems to be a shitty job, that your boss, the professor, is insane. Cornelius is just like, I guess I just gotta be here. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn every other day, but you know, nothing's popping up for me on Indeed, so I guess I'll just stay here. And then, like, poor Hines is, what are you doing there, girl? You gotta quit that job. Everyone's having a terrible time, and that rings true for me for jobs in general.
Kind of a love-hate relationship with Weapon X as a concept. When I was a teenager, I read Frank Thierry's Weapon X, and then when I got back into comics, I reread Frank Thierry's Weapon X, and it is a grim, like, I would never tell someone to read that. You would have to have very, very specific taste.
Another character I will eventually do a Patreon on is fucking Malcolm Colcord, who's one of the worst people who exists in fiction.
He's the protagonist of Weapon X.
It's a bad guy book.
Frank Thierry is a really great writer. I do sincerely believe that. Love his Catwoman. I hate the Weapon X.
Malcolm Colcord's the guy you call when the Red Skull's not available.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is an unpleasant read. But there was something as a teenager that was really like this dark thing you're not supposed to like. And there's something like kind of like that burns itself into you. You're like, what is about? I have more fond memories of X-Factor Investigations, which also has some of that like grimy, like edgy edgelordness to it. But, and I think that holds up maybe definitely better than Weapon X. But Weapon X as a program is always going to be a thing that I know enough about that it's hard to really hate it, right? Like, because I grew up with it a little bit, it's hard to super hate it. Obviously, if Weapon X was real, I wouldn't like it. But I think it's a cool concept.
Okay. Now, once in a while, a book comes along that really changes things. And crazy enough, this is one that really changed things. All right. So fast forward to the late 90s, or rewind, I suppose. I'm working in a comic shop. Part of my job, and I've told this on the show before, is to stack the back issue bins, right? So you go through and you see what's missing. I was relatively new to comics, still relatively new to X-Men. Marvel Comics Presents would always baffle me because the book had four stories in it and a different cover on each side. So this was a book you could flip over. Now, I've become pretty good friends with Terry Cavanaugh, who was the editor of this book. Putting it together was insane. Running it on the schedule that they did was crazy. But Marvel Comics Presents was running very, very frequently. And I would always overstock it in the bins because I'd put like four copies of each one because they had different covers and I thought they were different books. This is where I first came across the Weapon X book. Barry Windsor-Smith is the writer and artist on this. There is a Weapon X Wolverine. It's basically starts on issue number 72 of Marvel Comics Presents, and it's an 8-page story that runs for several issues in a row. Marvel Comics Presents has some really epic runs in different comics. There's a Black Panther arc that introduces his mother from South Africa that is a really beautiful one. But often they would just have like one-shot or one story that ran three or four issues. Weapon X was like the lead of this title for a while, and it launched it into new realms of popularity. Barry Windsor-Smith is a really talented British artist who came back to do something kind of revolutionary. I would love to interview Barry. It's now 1987, and Smith is giving us this really gritty stuff that really changed the industry in a way that like Frank Miller's Daredevil changed the industry. It's this really gritty, gory, Wolverine is naked in stasis tubes with bubbles floating over his bits, and it's the story of how the metal got put on his bones, which was a huge revelation at the time. This is just a few years before Magneto ripped it off, but we always assumed it was part of his mutation, but he's got bone claws underneath. Windsor-Smith's art and writing on this is very slow, it's very paced. It's almost as though this story is taking place in a really dark medical lab, and it's from the perspective of the evil scientists. If we saw this in a film, we could do the entire run on Marvel Comics Presents in like a 10 to 15 minute feature, where there'd be like the actor waking up, and then the lights would go out, and then he'd wake back up and be in stasis, the lights are back out, he'd wake up and he'd be outside hacking at a bear with his claws, the lights go back out, he's now in the stasis tube again, lights go back out, he's now fighting guards. It's that thing where he has no orientation because his memories are always being changed. The covers on these alone are gorgeous. The first one is Wolverine like half in costume, half naked in front of like a giant metal skull. It's a very Barry Windsor-Smith, Jackson Guise art. It says before Wolverine there was Weapon X.
I like grit. I'm always really drawn to the issues or the covers at least that have Wolverine in the Weapon X thing. I love all the purple wires and the big like power packs. I love the half naked in the winter, which suddenly now all makes sense. I kind of was like, this is weird that he's always in the snow, but now I understand why.
And I'm going to go just kind of down the covers here quickly. I described the cover of MCP 72. 73 has a cover of of Wolverine kind of floating in stasis. His claws are popped. He's got a bunch of tendrils popping out of his body. It's like real body horror-y as he's like floating with bubbles all around him. 74 has a close-up of his face. This is like the classic Wolverine. So much hair. He needs a haircut so bad. He's got his claws popped and he's covered in like techie wires that are going through his system. 75 shows him in bondage. He's laying naked on the cover with just wires wrapped up around his naked body as he cries out. It's almost very sexual. 76 shows him with Carol Hines, a very skinny white woman, like in his hands. He's holding her up in front of a backdrop of a moon or a spotlight, and he's getting ready to stab her. 77 shows Wolverine running through the Arctic in a very barren landscape, nearly naked, with his claws dripping with blood. 78 shows Wolverine in kind of profile, where he's back to that like long hair look, and the wires are running down his body. 79 shows him in the iconic Cyclops helmet, right? It's the big techie Professor X looking helmet from Krakoa with like the red visor over it, almost like Wolverine's in some sort of virtual reality. 80 shows him standing over the corpse of a guard running away, again, fully naked. 81 shows a close-up of Dr. Cornelius, and this is the cover for this episode, holding a gun, white guy with a beard, a man with bloody claws covered in wires coming at him. 82 shows Wolverine, again, nude, wearing only like a belt and like a little tech piece that covers his groin, being shot at in against a backdrop of computers. 83 shows Wolverine with the professor. Wolverine is on fire. He's naked, his claws are out, and he's got this bald, awful man with glasses like underneath his grip. 84 shows a close-up of Wolverine's face. He's like looking down as if he's sad. He's dripping with blood. Even hearing me recount those covers, go look at them because the covers are beautiful, but this changed what the visual imagery for Wolverine is. The claws, the blood, the sadness, the implied violence, the loneliness and isolation, they're truly beautiful.
Oh, I really love it. I think it's really beautiful. I think an art style that makes you go, wow, that's really pretty, but also like lets you really dive into the stories is really good. Also, just hearing all of those covers made me think of I'm a really big fan of Star Trek. Star Trek's like my thing that I latched onto as a child. And the original series, what they would do is that they often dealt with issues that were really complicated. Like this episode is anti-war, or this is like pointing out something that's wrong with the government. But they would bring like a guest star, like a young woman, and put her in a really scantily clad outfit so that the censors would be like, oh, no, we can't have side boob on TV. And they'd completely overlook what the story actually was. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that going on with Wolverine, where it's like, oh my God, he's naked. But it's like, oh, and don't think about what the story is. Just let the story go. And look, he's naked.
They draw him so hot. He's naked and hot. And it's crazy because his hair is nuts, but he's a sex symbol in this bloody, weird, like nearly naked wire remote look.
The hair is part of it. That's my argument. The hair
Absolutely.
is part of it.
These covers are amazing, especially the cover that you described, the 79 with the helmet, I think is maybe the most, aside from him in the like actual yellow, that may be the most iconic like image of Wolverine. It makes me kind of upset that visually in film, he's got like one movie that's kind of good, you know?
So this is an episode where we had to do a lot of setup in order to get to the meat of the story. Marvel Comics Presents number 72. We open on Dr. Abraham Cornelius looking through old files over coffee. He's cutting out newspaper articles about how he fled the country and avoided malpractice suits. So this is a bad dude. This is a dude who was like profiting off of people's pain. He's one of those crazy doctors who's doing shitty things and he got caught. This is not a good man as we begin. He has a file labeled Experiment X, but he moves the letters around to say X-Men as he's looking at the files. He remembers hiring a woman named Carol Hines, running experiments on the thresholds of Logan's healing factor. Articles are there saying things like Cornelius, saint or murderer? And there's some about the public outcry over mutants. Cornelius breaks a glass and he bleeds. And on the desk are pills, a bottle of whiskey, a handgun. And then there's those images of Logan floating in a tank, flowing blood, surrounded by wires. This is like a Watchmen level opening. If you guys have ever read Watchmen, it's
Oh,
that slow procedural piece. It's really beautiful. In issue 73, we see Dr. Cornelius shave Logan with poultry shears, and then he brings him before the professor, who is a guy named Truett Hudson. And Truett Hudson is a complicated character. Does one of you want to tackle the challenge of Truett Hudson in like one paragraph or less?
he's the one who believes in it. He's the one who like really believes in it, and he wants Logan to be his weapon.
This is the big boss, but this guy also has a history at Marvel. He's related to the infamous Hudson. Hudson family. Now, James Hudson is the director of Alpha Flight, right? So Department H is the one that's funding this. James Hudson's the one that is Guardian and later Vindicator, marries Heather. We see him again in his like little Captain America suit. Truett Hudson is his ancestor, and he is the son of a guy named Fred McDonald Hudson. So Mac Hudson, or James, is named after him. Truett was a civilian advisor to the United States Army in 1945. He went by Professor Thornton. He later was looking for information in a concentration camp where he met Mr. Sinister, and he gets some crazy sciencey stuff that he later turns into the Weapon Plus program, which means he's involved in Captain America stuff. He's involved in Ravencroft and the CIA and the Team X shit that produced agents such as Sabretooth, Maverick, Kestrel, Silver Fox, Mastodon. So this guy has some really weird ties to a lot of the Marvel Universe, but he first shows up here and he's kind of in between the scenes of a lot of things. He does show up in the Romulus stuff. He does show up in Wolverine Origins, but the professor, Truett Hudson, has a deeper Marvel lore than characters like Carol Hines and Abraham Cornelius.
Of the three of them, he's the one you like the least. Cornelius is at least like, he's like the middle ground, sort of, right? He's like bored with it and like he's being blackmailed. He's not the true believer.
If we play Fuck, Marry, Kill, Abraham Cornelius, Carol Hines, and the professor, you will marry Carol Hines every time. You will fuck Cornelius every time, and you will murder the professor every time.
That's the correct.
The professor is Cornelius's boss. He has just finished shaving Wolverine, and we have a little bit of a dialogue between them. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Dr. Cornelius.
Thanks, billing, sir. A few minutes.
How is the patient?
Could be better. He put up some resistance when the boys picked him up last night. They had to jostle him a bit.
Is he damaged? Any deep cuts?
He's okay.
Can't afford leakage.
We plugged him up tight, and then Dr. Carol Hines joins us.
Professor, Dr. Cornelius, we can begin now.
Begin.
Feed. Conducive feed. Steady feed.
Adamantium breakdown 29-1, sir.
This is an extraordinary experiment, Professor. I'm honored to be part of it.
Of course you are, Cornelius.
Up the Pheno B 2 points. No, 1 point. Any more of that and he'll have beans for brains. Is there cause for concern?
I don't think so, Professor. You can choose Logan for this remarkable stamina. What we're getting here is automatic nervous system kicking in. He's a hard fellow even when he's unconscious. Chelation, begin.
So the chelation is a type of bonding. This is real in science, where you build bond ions and their molecules to metal ions. So as Dr. Cornelius works on the metal bonding process, Logan proves to be pretty resilient. Hines, would you please access Mr. Logan's medical profile and history? I studied it long enough, but I could have missed...
You're really letting me down here, Cornelius. Why didn't you prepare for this in advance?
I thought I'd prepared for everything, Professor, but who could foresee this? I couldn't program for that, Professor. Actually, it really doesn't seem credible, Hines. It seems that Logan's highly accelerated heart rate is draining the adamantium reservoir at a rate of... But I think I can assure you there'll be no further problems, Professor. You see, Logan's heart rate can't possibly go up any higher, or he'd be Superman or something. We've enough Thorazine in Logan to drop a bullock, so the problem is obviously more than the autonervous system or a cast iron constitution.
According to MedFax, Mr. Logan has been shot at least 5 times and survived each attack, 4 to the trunk and once to the leg.
Huff geezer, we know this, Hines.
But the bioscans show nothing in epidermal nor internal scar tissue.
Cornelius, didn't you say that Logan was hurt last night? Then where are the wounds?
Hines, do you have the readings?
I have a trace, but no show. An hour ago, he had a dislocated jaw, cuts, abrasions. Now there's nothing. And, well, I don't know how important this is. It seems silly, but Mr. Logan's hair has almost entirely grown back in just 20 minutes.
She's like, he survived some gunshots, and you just gave him a haircut, but his hair's back.
Like, I just watched it happen. It's kind of freaky.
We seem to be in the midst of something unprecedented. Our Mr. Logan is somewhat more than human. Okay, I have to rethink this fast. If the patient's wounds are now healed, his heart rate could drop. Be prepared to de-escalate at a second's notice. That's plan one. Plan two, if the rate continues to rise, pump equivalent norepinephrine to its ratio. But keep me informed of all changes. Miss Hines, is the adamantium reservoir sufficient for all this?
Sufficient at current rate, sir.
Not good enough. Go to reserve.
I'll need authorization. authorization from...
You have it, madam. Go to reserve adamantium. But during this intense process, Cornelius notes that the professor has walked out. We jump to 74, where the professor has called his benefactor, furious that he hasn't been told that Logan was a mutant in advance. Now, the benefactor is set up to be, do you guys know who?
I don't remember.
It's initially set up to be Apocalypse, but later it kind of hints that it's Romulus, which is an interesting thing either way. There's a lot of characters weaving in and out of this, again, that are very complex. Matt, do you want to give us the 1-2 on who Romulus is?
Romulus is the puppet master behind Logan and Sabre. He's this ancient sort of like enormous Wolverine with 5 claws, right? Like, and he's been sort of in Wolverine's past, sort of like manipulating the moment to this.
Romulus looks like Sabretooth on mutant growth hormone.
He is the Onslaught of Wolverine and Sabretooth, right? Like if Onslaught is the like way too far, too many blades version of Magneto, then Romulus is that for Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Romulus is a plot device that was relatively unpopular. After Wolverine's origins got revealed, they did a book called Wolverine Origins, where they're going back and trying to put all the pieces of his crazy past together. And they needed a through line. You need a villain that serves as one through line to all of this. Mr. Sinister might have worked, but they created this massive guy with huge claws who has been manipulating Wolverine's life for decades, basically. He has a hot twin sister named Remus. That's my least favorite part of him.
She's actually worse than he is.
But the director is reporting into some of these mysterious forces that are monitoring all this. Now, the other huge piece of Marvel lore that ties in here is adamantium itself. Adamantium is involved in the creation of Captain America's shield. And there's an adamantium vibranium mix that no one in science has ever been able to replicate. So Captain America's shield is like an accident that happened. Now, it was designed by Dr. Myron McClain, who is a little known Marvel character. But the adamantium bonding process to bond it to bones was designed by a character who is the father of Lady Deathstrike. And Lady Deathstrike is pissed because Wolverine has her dad's like shit on her bones, basically. It used his process. So again, there's a ton of Marvel lore. We could do a whole adamantium episode or like a whole Weapon X episode. It's very easy to get lost in all of this. They have been experimenting on Logan at mysterious orders, and it turns out he has a healing factor, so they can really amp up what is going on. So now as we're looking at Logan in the tank, he wakes up. He has enough Thorazine in him to keep him knocked out for days, but he is awake. He's growing back. His wounds are healing. His hands are bleeding. Spiked claws emerge and the technicians panic, and Logan breaks free, killing one of the new guards, a guy named Cole. We jump to issue 75. If you knew what you were really up to, Professor, I might be very upset with you. I've helped you to create a monster. It's a mindless, murdering animal.
But we can make it behave.
Behave? Good God, man, it slaughtered an innocent boy in here. Then it came after me and the guards, straight through the blasted window as if it wasn't there. Logan could have killed us all. I met his eyes for a second, filled with hate and fury, but I couldn't tell if it was some animal bloodlust or horror at what we've done to him. Then with his life supports torn away, he collapsed. Those terrible knives sunk back into his body, and I thanked God for my future. So the professor tells Cornelius that Logan's a mutant and therefore not human, and he says, Professor, the experiment, the adamantium bonding process, are you saying it mutated Logan into this infernal thing?
No, Doctor, you must understand that this infernal thing is what Logan has always been, a determinedly violent individual pummeling his way through a purposeless life, one day distinguished from the next only by the changing patterns of bruises and blood from last night's drunken fights. But then, inexplicably, the wounds are healed and gone before noon in his first beer. I doubt if you've ever suffered hangovers. All his years, Logan has endured this, suffering a destiny that ported him from his guts outward, battling a fate decreed him by nature. He became a government agent and was ideally suited to the danger of the work. He had nothing to lose, not even his godforsaken life, shot, stabbed, and beaten in the course of duty, recklessly seeking the honor of dying for his country. How pitifully desperate he must have become. But now his demon is free, released by the intervention of Experiment X. Thus, the double id is supplanted by the superego, and all of Logan's primal instincts are focused and resolved. And what you're looking at right now, Doctor, is the most formidable tactical weapon ever conceived.
I can tell you have a theater background, because That was a monologue, my friend. Cordelia says, yes, the knives then, in his hands, pure adamantium.
Have you not heard a word I've said? They're not knives, Cornelius, they're claws.
This is crazy science. He's taking such joy in this. He's twirling his fucking mustache if he had one. So Logan attacks again. They hit him with some offensive weapons. They leave him literally like a smoking corpse on the ground. Can't we treat him better than this? He's still human in some way, isn't he? But the professor orders Logan to be reprogrammed into a weapon. We jump to 76. Cornelius and Hines have strapped Logan down to run tests on him as the professor begins pushing for mental conditioning. They work to erase Logan's prior identity and make him believe he was an animal to be commanded. But as they connect Logan to the computer, a manifestation of his pain screams out on the screen. Logan wakes up during the procedure and nearly kills the scientist before he's sedated again. The professor is furious and wants to kill the creature, but Cornelius calms him down. Logan projects the image of the murdered professor on the screen from his own mind. Like, I'm fucking killing you. I'm coming after you, bitches, is what he's saying here. Now, there's a character later added by Larry Hama called Cyborg, PSI-Borg, that is involved in this process, like suppressing Wolverine's memories. That's another mutant guy. Well, Eldo Ferro, I think is his name. We won't talk about him today. We jump to 77. Logan is field tested against animals like sheep and wolves, and they closely monitor his progress, realizing the adamantium had grafted to his bones to make claws. Cornelius calls Logan the perfect killing machine. He was left out overnight at 15 below weather to test his healing factor. Allison, you mentioned earlier that working for Weapon X is super shitty. I'm going to give you the worst job. You are the animal wrangler. It's your job to go out in the Arctic and get animals, bring them back on chains, and make them ready to fight Logan at the second's notice. You got to keep them ravenous like you're in the gladiator pits of Rome.
Here are my 2 weeks. I will not serve the whole 2 weeks. Here's just my resignation. I'm leaving right now.
We need some moose, a couple of grizzly bears. We need like 7 or 8 grizzly bears. Make sure there's a tiger just in case. Maybe a pack of wolves. Go.
Am I going to be like a dog? What about a cat? I can handle a cat.
We jump to 78. Cornelius has implanted mind control technology into Logan's brain that has like a 10-mile radius on it. If you want a puppet, you got to have strings, he says. There's Geppetto here. But he was aware that Logan could deeply feel the procedures in his brain, and he was conscious through this. Logan's like broken memories for years and years after this, right? It's rough. Wolverine is now nearly naked. He's got a new tech helmet and a remote control hanging over his junk, and now they can control him. So in 79, the team tests Logan and they start calling him Experiment X. He fights a rogue bear in the wild. The professor's anxious to use Logan in the field, but Cornelius notes that the control helmet and the battery packs that Logan is carrying into combat are not ideal, which is crazy.
You'd think that he'd notice that.
This cosplay look, it's a hat and a remote on your junk, and that's it.
Yeah, at no point were they like, yes, pants. The government can pay for pants.
The professor orders Logan to be field tested against human targets now. First, I'm told we're creating a kind of super soldier from Experiment X. Then it turns out he's some sort of mutant animal thing. I got virtually blackmailed into this whole affair. Like, what's this thing gonna do? Is the weapon gonna protect us from the commies or something? Like some kind of assassin? I ain't got murder inside me, Hines. Not like the professor. Okay, Cornelius is a fucking whiner. That's another thing about this guy that you need to learn right away. So Wolverine breaks free. He starts killing guards, and things are going crazy. It's getting worse and worse. Matt, do you want to draw a parallel between this and X-23's origins for just a minute?
I'm in the facility. They kind of do a better job of perfecting what they're doing here with Wolverine in that she has that like kill switch, right? Like there's the thing that like she does not have the, like once that is launched, that becomes Laura's arc, right? Overcoming her kill switch.
Laura is born to be a weapon, right? Yes. Like they're putting clone embryos in women. Yeah.
Because they shoot Logan in the head and drag him to Weapon X. Like he did not volunteer. It's not X-Men Origins Wolverine where he's like, I will do this. I'm signing up for this. He did not.
But I've become really dear friends with Erica Schultz, who's writing Laura Kinney, and she's like, that's the difference, is Wolverine still had a childhood, even though he lost his memories. Laura didn't have one, which is a crazy thing to realize. Okay, we jump to issue 80. Logan is rampaging and all the security systems are down and all the guards are slaughtered. And Cornelius assumes that the professor has done all of this on purpose. purpose. And the professor's in a different room, and he's accidentally left the intercom on, as he calls his employer, who had set Logan free to, quote, clear the deadwood. So he accidentally brought himself on the intercom. It was like everybody's being hunted down by Wolverine in the next room.
A PlayStation remote just moving Wolverine around, killing these guards somewhere.
The poor professor gets his glasses broken by Wolverine, and now he's like, kill him, kill the beast, right? Like, it's very Prince John from Robin Hood and Disney, if you guys remember. He wants to go suck his thumb in the corner now that he's in danger, too. In issue...
Everyone's a big bad scientist until your mutant killing machine starts killing you.
In 81, Logan is just killing. He's a fucking crazy man with claws. And we get sound effects like schluck, 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 which is awful. And Cornelius and Hines are tending to the professor. And it turns out the professor had his hand cut off by Logan at the end of last issue. So Cornelius uses his tie to tie off the wound. And they head for the safety in the adamantium reactor, where Cornelius is holding a rifle. And even then, the professor will not tell them who the benefactor is. The professor uses the computer to try to call for help, emphasizing that he's the only one there that's not expendable. Kill these other two, but get me out of here. This man is a terrible boss. But the benefactor just shuts the power down, implying that the professor is expendable, and now Weapon X is attacking. In 82, Cornelius is hesitant to shoot Weapon X with the rifle. He's just standing there covered in the blood of guards. So the professor hits Cornelius, which then makes the gun go off, and then in response, Weapon X seemingly impales Cornelius with his claws. The professor and Hines go running for it as Cornelius lays dying, covered in blood. The professor throws Carol Hines then into the reactor as bait for Weapon X, and then runs for it as Wolverine is trapped in there with Carol Hines. Weapon X then approaches, and the professor opens a fission gate to kill everyone within the adamantium reactor. Jump to 83. Carol is begging for her life. Please kill me quickly. Like, Wolverine says, you mean nothing to me, basically. Then the professor opens up the fission gates. Carol is struck a few times before she flees from the pit, and Logan is then caught in the burning fiery explosions inside. But then the professor's benefactor turns the gate off, and Logan comes bursting through the window, killing the professor with three claws to the head. Okay, before we get to the big final battle, there's a lot of crazy shit going on here, and I know I covered some of it quickly, but it's really powerful. It's a strong read. Allison, what are your thoughts on the professor as a boss?
I think Cornelius is getting way too much flack when the professor's the one that's in charge of everything. Honestly, I'm kind of like, Abraham seems pretty okay. I think the professor is the one that should be getting all the credit for being a cuckoo bananas nut job.
It's pretty violent. The fission reactors, violent. The characters all getting killed. It's crazy.
It's so much bloodier than I remember, too. Yeah, no, it's crazy. So he's like, you meant me nothing to me to Carol, but he's also like, I'm not an animal. Maybe he's not mercy for her, but it's mercy for himself, right? Wolverine really gets a hand on the wheel for a second there. And
it's Wolverine berserker. He doesn't have his memories, and he's in a fucking trauma episode, and he's like in a super hyper vigilant dissociative state and hacks everything around him. And it's because they fucking messed with his mind. And everyone in this facility deserves to die, including Carol Hines, even though she's the least culpable. So then we jump to 84. It opens with Logan throwing the body of the professor into the incinerator, and then Logan wanders free. He's naked, and his memories are slowly starting to return. But then he hears the panicked responses of the men in charge through his headset. So he's running free, he's hacking through the fence, and Logan works to like stave off his berserker rage, and he runs straight into a fucking Siberian tiger outside. Allison did her job. We got a tiger.
I did
too.
It. I got a cat.
So the voices in his mind continue as Logan is slaughtering the animal. And we're going to read these three again.
It's extraordinary, is it not, Cornelius? A creature of such power, shaken by his own shadow, driven by fear of himself.
Yeah, but he's pulling through despite it all.
You think so? We shall see what...
Yeah, I guess we will, Professor. I mean, he's still standing, isn't he? He didn't buckle. He didn't give in. He didn't even retract his claws when we gave him the power to do it, you know?
Hush, Cornelius. Sound the snow.
Siberian tiger, sir?
Yes, thank you, madam.
This man does not enjoy being corrected by women in the workplace.
No.
We could have set this up better.
How do you mean, Doctor?
If Logan had to seek it out, you know, hunt the thing down, just based on instinct to kill it or confront it or whatever, instead of the tiger just being there, it'd have been more telling, I think.
Yes, I suppose you're right, but still, it is an acceptable scenario for one such as Logan's simplistic perception.
Look at that. Logan's right in there. He's just as wild as before.
It may seem so, Professor, but in the past few days, Weapon X has been changed irrevocably. His savagery is now tempered by ego and rest.
Ratiocination.
Ratiocination, man. Any hesitation, a moment of fear or mere caution, and he will be undone.
Yeah, like literally, right?
It's been necessary that Logan should not know of his indestructible skeleton.
Won't help him if he gets disemboweled, Professor.
No, he could learn it the hard way. It's true. He's gaining the advantage, Professor. But not so long ago, Weapon X beheaded a grizzly bear without hesitation, without so much as a tussle. That is what I call getting the advantage.
You gotta have some faith, Professor. Look, I'll lay you 100 on Logan. What do you think of that?
This is not a game, Cornelius.
You're telling me that slash could have gutted him, and I'd be out of C note.
You don't see, Doctor. That was a feint. Logan is drawing in for the kill.
Look, a magnificent blow.
Eat another one, straight to the heart. Son of a gun's more brutal than ever.
So what do you say then, Professor?
Indeed, Cornelius, remarkable. His instincts and reflexes, though perhaps more pragmatic than seem, quite undiminished. And his ferocity is still unparalleled.
Pity I couldn't get you to make that bet, huh?
Will not sully the nature of scientific endeavor with wagers, Cornelius.
Yeah, well, that's just 'cause you'd have lost a bundle. You underestimated in your prize, Professor. Logan was set up. We gave him a chance to escape, but he didn't run. Instead, he turned around and brutalized the lot of us. Then we jammed his psyche with his fear of mutantism. Didn't faze him. I'd say he came through A1, wouldn't you?
Yes, and yet he failed to kill Hines, an act of mercy that leaves doubt still in my mind.
That's just because Hines was never a threat to Logan, Professor. It's like we just proved he'll kill only if threatened with death or,
Or out of hunger.
yeah, or out of hunger. And, like, who'd want to eat Hines, huh?
Yes, all right, Cornelius. I suppose we should consider this experiment a success, flawed though it may be.
Hines is like, I'm right here, bitches.
Like,
Talking about it.
I'm. You, why are you talking about me like I'm not in the room? I'm right here. If I may say, Doctor, I think Mr. Logan only killed you because of that accidental shooting, sir. I don't think he would have attacked you otherwise.
Huh, that's right. Thanks, Hines.
Huh.
So what have we got, Professor? Logan thinks he killed just about all of us getting to you, the focus of his vengeance, but now he knows he ain't a human, and with that he knows it was you who harnessed his dark secret.
Indeed. So he had to destroy me, did he not? And in the act of killing his creator, his once inculpable savagery is transformed into the cunning of a ruthless killer. I savor the events, Cornelius.
Yeah, well, you did kind of hedge your bets a little, you know?
What do you mean, Cornelius?
You know, making up that stuff about how you were actually working for somebody else, some great power or something.
Yes, why?
Like you were just a stooge or a flunky instead of the genius behind Experiment X.
Yes. That was mere psychological ruse.
It was good setting yourself up for your own murder, but then playing at being betrayed by the real creator of Weapon X in the end, working for sympathy, testing Logan to see if he'd reason that you weren't the real threat. Clever, tricky.
Indeed, Cornelia. Dramatic ploy that proved a great deal about the nature of the beast.
Yeah, real cute. But then they realize that Logan has actually killed his wranglers and escaped. And then Logan actually breaks in. And as Logan is wandering off in the snow, the last dialogue is Hines questioning Cornelius, realizing that Logan was a person in this against his will. And Cornelius assumes that Logan isn't even human, but Hines knows that he is. He's human, and he doesn't deserve this. And that is the end of the fucking Weapon X saga by Barry Windsor Smith. Allison, thank you for being patient with our long dialogue tropes here. What was the big ruse? This is like a big final issue reveal that's actually quite jarring. What's going on for Logan through this?
He's smarter than they think he is,
Well, yeah, it's
yes.
a big brainwash scenario, right? Like there's this
Yeah.
elaborately long, it's like fucking Arcade or like Mysterio. They're like messing with Logan's mind and like making him think he's done all these things just to test the parameters of what he'll do. This is like Mr. Sinister playing with like a little mouse, you know? It's crazy.
It's also 4 issues of it. So it's like a full, actual, like normal length comic where we just think he's killed all of them, right? And then the reveal is that no, they were doing the thing they did before where they like messed with his brain and they made him imagine. in this scenario.
By the way, the word ratiocination basically just means the process of exact thinking or reasoning. So there's your toilet paper word of the day,
Good, good vocab word.
everybody. This is a really impactful thing. And again, we're still kind of dealing with the repercussions of all of this for Wolverine. Now, there's a lot of shit going on all over the place, but the next time we see Cornelius directly is in Wolverine Volume 2, numbers 48 through 50.
It's kind of like a looks at this the Marvel Presents story, but kind of from Wolverine's point of view of how he's trying to remember it. Him and Jubilee go to the weapons facility, and he like knows it's something familiar. And he goes and he's walking around and he's having these memory flashes as he's walking around. There's the car that he was abducted in. There's a little pouch from Silver Fox. There's stuff that he's remembering, and then he also finds like sets that they use. He sets off some alarms, and now Carol Hines and the professor, or not the professor, Cornelius, know that he's been there, and so Carol Hines has to track him down. So she just like watches him from afar. Not very good. She's not a spy.
It's established here that the Weapon X facility is in like remote northern Alberta, which is where Cyclops later makes his base during the like the Jean Grey school, Professor X school era of schism, which is crazy to me. But keep going. Logan goes off to New York.
And Professor X and Jean Grey are trying to help him confront some memories. So they like do a little bit of a psychic rescue thing. They see him fighting the bear at the facility. Hines calls in the professor to check in, and he's like, just observe. She does it at like a payphone. And I will say that when I saw her at the payphone, I was like, isn't Wolverine's whole thing that he can smell people? Like, he's gonna figure out she's there. And then that the professor has created Shiva to kill Logan, but we don't really know what Shiva is.
Yeah, Shiva's this giant fucking death robot. This is like it's Wolverine number 50, right? So it's the
Yeah.
Weapon X program creating an AI to go after Wolverine to bring him in. And it's like a self-perpetuating scary robot. It's kind of a fun design, but it's not a thing that's used very often in the comics.
It looks a little bit like Strife, but I might just be saying that because I just read Strife in a New Mutants comic. Then there's this whole thing where Logan rides his motorcycle into a building, into an elevator to go talk to Nick Fury.
That's that good Larry Hama. Like, truly, Mark Silvestri and Larry Hama can write a story where Wolverine rides his motorcycle into a shield base to go ask Nick Fury a question. And it's my favorite. It's so good. I love that.
My favorite part of that is that there's a little like in the past where he's like, hey, Forge, where do they put that big fucking Quinjet thing? And Forge is like, oh, secret place. And he's like, do you know where that secret place is? Yeah, it's over there. Why? And he's like, no reason. Just go about your tinkering. You're fine. You're fine. And at no point Forge is like, I shouldn't tell the guy who's kind of crazy, like where Shield is. But he goes up, he rides his motorcycle, he gets him to send a dossier, which I think we've been debating. Was it 50,000 pages this dossier is?
It's insane. The other thing that's really entertaining here is the secret base of like Hines and the professor here is in the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C., which is referenced in other Wolverine comics. And there's one time when Carol Danvers is part of this. Like, if you go to that Wolverine minus one comic that we reviewed on my show, again, crazy Marvel shit that's all mixed together. It's insane.
Specifically, it's the pest control section of the Department of Agriculture. I love it because Wolverine goes in there and the lady at the desk is like, this is the Department of Agriculture. You can't just come in here. And I'm like, is the Department of Agriculture like, can you be that more like, oh, you're in the Department of Agriculture? I just feel like that's not, I feel like it's a little bit more laid back than that.
So Wolverine has this giant file and he takes the X-Men with him back to the Weapon X compound. We got Cyclops, Jean Grey, Xavier, Jubilee, and the Blackbird. And then we've got the professor here and the movie set and a calendar about artichokes and the professor's glasses. And there are other operatives that have also had their memories affected. Wolverine's really trying to struggle to remember who they are, like Sabretooth and Silver Fox and Kestrel, who's John Wraith, and Vol, this is Cyborg, and Mastodon and Wildcat. Wildcat is Maverick. It's crazy because there's all these code names, but the characters like Mastodon, we've never really done anything with. I could totally do an episode on Cyborg and on John Wraith and fucking on Silver Fox for sure.
I keep thinking about the floppy disks that they said. They're like, there's not a million floppy disks. We're going through megabytes of data. It's so funny.
Shiva attacks, and there's a giant battle because Shiva can keep rebuilding bodies for itself. It's like one of those self-replicating AIs. And Silver Fox is here. Silver Fox is confusing. She's a Native American woman who was Wolverine's lover, who was raped and killed by Sabretooth, but also she was either beforehand or after really an agent of Weapon X the whole time. And she's around in a couple of really weird missions. We'll talk about her another time, but she's an interesting character that has been well remembered because she's in the movie versions, right? right? She's the lady Sabretooth killed that one time, but she's got some really interesting connections. Anyway, Silver Fox shows up and been part of Weapon X for like a really long time, and she realizes her own memories have been changed. She hits Hines with the butt of her gun and then turns it on the professor and shoots him a bunch, and Hines screams, and the professor's dead, and Silver Fox is gone, and the Shiva protocols have all left to go after Sabretooth, the end. All of these stories go dot 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 in different directions, but this is the Weapon X madness that Larry Hama writes in the early 90s. It's truly crazy. Matt, do you want to continue us with Wolverine 62, 63? Again, we're
Yeah.
skipping over a bunch of stuff here.
John Wraith has like gotten Sabretooth in a position where he's basically chained to them, and he's sort of a unwilling participant in this as John Wolverine Mast is it Mastodon? But it's
Mastodon's
eventually
another one, but he like melts away
he
because
melts in
the weapon.
Jubilee's arms and she freaks out.
Oh,
And then
gross.
yeah, eventually Silver Fox, who shows up, who's part of Hydra at the time, she re when once she realizes that her memories have been messed with, like Wolverine's has, she shoots Sabretooth, she's gonna shoot Wolverine. They end up teaming up to go like blow this mission. After they eat six pizzas, that's important that they do eat six pizzas. They go to Cuba because they were
Like Weapon X is tied to like Cuban crime families, and there's that guy
yeah.
Aldo Ferro or Cyborg
That's
that I mentioned before,
yeah.
who is in Cuba now,
When they fight him, he like turns into like a big like tumor man.
and he also goes by Vol.
Oh, he's Vol. Oh, that
Yeah,
makes sense. Okay.
Cyborg is also Vol. If your heads are hurting, even as we're telling you these stories, we're like, wait, which character was that, and where did they fit here? And we're keeping it simple. It's really complex. We do get a long flashback here where we see where Aldo Ferro joins the team, so he's part of that initial group with Cornelius and Hines and the professor. And he's like, "We don't need movie sets and memory implants anymore. I can just psychically program all the memories." And Pharaoh's torturing operatives for fun. And then we can jump back to the present where Hines hits him with a brick to the head. She does not like this man. He's messed with all of their memories, it seems. Do you want to give us Hines' speech here, Allison?
Sure. Pharaoh didn't just come in and plant those false memories in all of you. He's the one who came up with the idea to link up your false memories to your pain receptors. His theories came with a load of pseudoscientific baggage to make it all palpable. The initiation rites of the Mandans, the Australian Aborigines, African tribal scarring, pain and memory, reinforcement linked to cultural survival. We went along with it because it worked so much better than our own method, but then we realized that he enjoyed it.
And then Pharaoh breaks Hines's neck before horribly mutating into this giant, like, pustule of a man. And then he just explodes. But it turns out he didn't actually break her neck. She just, like, died from fear, it implies. We don't know how much of this is psychic craziness, right? That's what happens when you have telepaths. So Cyborg is there. There's a giant fight. He tortures Wolverine and his friends with visions from their past. And all the X-Men are here, right? So they get some individual kind of psychic visions. And then he admits that the professor was supposed to give Aldo Ferro anti-aging benefits because of his work, but he never got them. So in the end, Wolverine has lost Silver Fox again. He's learned all of his memories with her were real. He lays her to rest. Cyborg explodes. The end. It's a huge story about his memory implants, and it's insane. There's so many details going on, and we haven't even broken into like the Maverick, Team X, Omega Red craziness. Like, it goes so many directions.
I mean, I like this story. I think I like that sometimes Larry Hama will be writing something in one panel and on that same page, just like she broke her neck and it's like she died of fear. And it's Maverick who says both things. Like it's almost like he stopped, he came back and he was like, it's gotta be something else. There's a lot, but it fits right with the memory like theme of it all, right? It fits that like not everything went exactly the way you think it went, even when it's happening.
So rest in peace, Carol Hines. Do we like her or not?
She's the best of the three of
She's also a bit whiny,
She is
like
also kind of
Cornelius.
whiny, that's true.
I'm like,
Professor
girl, you
gets
should be in the
points.
club.
The professor gets points for not being like so whiny, except for in that one moment where she's running into the base to kill him.
Cornelius and the professor get a significant amount of backstory, at least to some degree. Hines never really gets any. She's kind of just a woman trying to make it in a crazy world. I do think we get told that she worked for NASA in a line of dialogue prior to coming here, and then she was recruited to this like CIA program, right? So she's been part of this, and she's like the agent just trying to do her job, but it is corrupt. But also, she's corrupt too. I don't know. Rest in peace, Carol Hines. We probably won't talk about you again unless we review an issue that you're in. So we're gonna jump forward to the Frank Thierry series we referenced earlier. Malcolm Colcord and the quick version of this guy, he was basically a guard at Weapon X who gets hacked up by Wolverine and it scars his face. And he's so upset about his facial scarring that he becomes an abusive, horrible monster who beats, rapes, kills, and scars women in front of him. He does it to Aurora on panel. He's formed concentration camps. He is murdering children right and left. And he's weaponized a group of people who have memory implants. And they're all supervillains. Mesmero's here. Sauron is here. Sabretooth and Wildchild are here. It's a crazy series. We jump to issues 23 through 25, which is where we see the flashback of the professor finding one of Mr. Sinister's labs. This is the Sinister who later had to deprogram racism out of himself because he worked in the Nazi concentration camps. Rough story. Who knows how it fits in after the Sins of Sinister revelations. Professor discovers Sinister's journals on mutants inside then. So now we go to the flashback where he's taken Cornelius and Hines to Alaska. He's reading files on Xavier, Magneto, Namor, Wolverine that Mr. Sinister has been keeping. And the professor says,
Well, even I must admit, Dr. Hines, when it came to my research regarding these creatures, fortune has always been on my side.
Cornelius says, you, how fortunate were you for all those years you had to toil on those early Weapon Plus programs, only to be passed over year after year. About time they finally gave you your own program, you ask me. So we're implying a significant history for the professor with Weapon Plus.
Hear, hear. Which number is this one anyway, Professor?
It's the 10, so X, if you will. Kind of apropos.
And in this version, we see Malcolm Colcord working as a guard outside the compound. John Sublime is also here. He's the assistant to Cornelius, and he assures the professor that Sublime is harmless.
He's a germ that makes you racist, kind of. He's like a metaphor for racism, but a real person also. He's a big smiling, like a book salesman, and also a germ that turns you racist.
Yes, that's an excellent description. Morrison creation, who's billions of years old. That's kind of all you need. So he's here too, and that just makes it insane. So we now
So
flash
crazy.
forward a bit. We see Sublime and the Professor talking in front of a screen showing pictures of Maverick, John Wraith, Silver Fox, and we see Maverick training in the facility. Their funding has been pulled, and weapons 11 and 12 were failures. So now we have weapon 13 being developed. Phantomex! We love Phantomex. The Professor chooses to break Weapon X off from the Plus programs entirely. So now it's become its own brand. Branch, which is still going on in the comics now. Again, Project Hellfire and Helverine and all that. We now jump forward a little bit farther. The professor is dead. Sublime helps Colcord build the new Weapon X program, this time with concentration camps. And we jump to 25, where Cornelius and the professor walk the streets of Roanoke, Virginia, where Logan has just slaughtered dozens of innocent civilians at their command. Cornelius feels the test was very distasteful, but he recognizes it was necessary. 116 people are killed and their bodies are burned. So we're getting more and more bloody history for Wolverine. This is a rough series, but the flashbacks do fit nicely in continuity, even though it makes it insane.
I think this is a really good story within it. I like the War of the Programs kind of mostly because Phantom X has a ton of fun stuff to do, but this reveal really makes Cornelius much worse than he was even in the original series that they did the thing that they finally said they were going to do. They're going to drop him on a city, and they say here it's like, what if it's not Roanoke? Next time it'll be Moscow and Tehran, and like they're planning to do like this like international terror, which is kind of what Weapon X like deals with, like the book Weapon X deals with it.
It's interesting they chose Roanoke too. There's a whole season of American Horror Story about
Yes.
Roanoke, where there's that famous story about a group of people that went missing mysteriously. I don't know that we clearly elucidated, by the way, at the end of Wolverine number 50, it's heavily implied that Silver Fox killed the professor, who's no longer around. So Truett Hudson is dead at this point. Okay, we're gonna jump forward again. And Matt, do you want to cover Death of Wolverine for us? This is a story that went on for so long.
I love Death of Wolverine. It's Charles Soule, sort of this like last little moment where Wolverine is dying and Reed Richards can't fix him, a couple of other people can't fix him, and he
His healing
goes
factor is gone, and he's like dying slowly of adamantium
of
poison.
adamantium
And
poison.
every time he pops his claws, he's a little closer to death.
Oh man, it's really some good stuff there. The person who's sending these people to come and kill him turns out to be Cornelius.
Right, so Hines is dead, the professor's dead, but Cornelius is still out there, and they bring him back as the big bad for this one story, and
He's
it's actually
older too.
really good. So he's in Nevada, and he's like experimenting on humans because he wants to perfect his process and like remain relevant. It's the dying white man who just has to do something terrible before he goes. I'm getting it right, Logan. I'm taking everything I've learned in my life, all of my failures, and I'm getting it right. I deserve to be known for something other than helping to make a killer unkillable. When I made you, and Allison, do you want to read Wolverine here?
You didn't make me.
I gave you your adamantium skeleton, made your claws unbreakable. I've kept up with what you've been doing, Mr. Logan. You think you would ever have become a superhero without me? Brightly colored costumes, all that pageantry. You don't belong in bright colors. So he's boosted subsystems in his subjects to superhuman levels. Neurological, endocrine, muscular, they're perfect. He's even smelted his own adamantium. But every time he injects it into someone, they die horribly. Which, of course, you're putting fucking metal into people. Now he wants Wolverine's healing factor, but Wolverine has lost his healing factor, so he can't perfect his experiments without it. So Cornelius orders him killed by a guy named Major Sharp, who is a character that ties into Weapon X and has a short life in a Marvel title that we won't talk about today called The Wolverines. It's his finest new experiment. So Wolverine's fighting for his life against Major Sharp, and Cornelius is ranting on a loudspeaker. You know my mistake. I've thought about it a lot. I used an animal. You're an animal. They call you Wolverine. I know they do. I kept tabs. Do you know the taxonomic name for Wolverine? Gulo gulo, Latin for gluttonous glutton. They're thirsty, horrible creatures, thirsty for killing. They're one of the only creatures that kills for pleasure, other than man, of course. It's a good name for you. Make something perfect and you're immortal. You matter. I did it wrong the first time around. My mistake. I will change the world for the better. Before I die, I will. So Wolverine tricks Sharp into breaking into Cornelius's office. Cornelius gets impaled by a piece of glass. He runs for it. He tries drowning Wolverine in the smelted adamantium. It's like this liquid metal that's forming and will be an unbreakable thing. And Wolverine walks toward Cornelius as the adamantium hardens over him. At least I tried. I tried to make something. I tried to change the world. What did you ever do but kill people? What did you ever do? And then Cornelius dies on the roof, drowning in adamantium. The end forever. Fuck you very much, sir. It's so good.
So good because through this whole run, and because Charles Soule is a genius, Wolverine does do more than just kill people. He's merciful to Lady Deathstrike and to Sabretooth and to Nuke, these people who like are coming to hurt and kill him. Wolverine is totally being the actual hero, the much more white knight. And in the end, Cornelius has got to die.
I think Wolverine looks really cool when he's all covered in that adamantium when he's dying. I also didn't know that he dies. I went, wait, Matt, does he actually die? And you said that he does.
Wolverine does die. There's then an event launched called The Death of Wolverine, which spins into a bunch of limited series. But then Old Man Logan also gets to come in and be part of the titles, so he's not really gone. And then he comes back because Kate Pryde like phased him out of the adamantium. And then a bunch of people get his like bones and clone him, and like he turns into all kinds of weapons. It doesn't go well for Krakoa on Wolverine. In fact, Wolverine is the character that Krakoa was worst for, I think. It really is just a terrible time for him. I love when writers kind of dig in on the Wolverine mythos, like Wolverines are real scrappers, Oh, they're like burrowers. That's why. And then this guy is like, they're gluttonous. They're gluttonous gluttons. Like that's what makes you so crazy.
I think it's dehumanizing though, right? Like that's the whole thing. Is it it's that's what Cornelius has to do to go to sleep at night. He asked the professor, how do you sleep at night in one of the books? He says, oh, easily in my bed. I think Cornelius really doesn't sleep very well having done this. So he's like, you were an animal and I can only live with myself if you are the
The professor, they say it when they're the Roanoke issue, and he says, with a quilt made by my Aunt Trudy.
Oh, I love that. That's so funny.
Cornelius is a character who was an unethical scientist who gets recruited into this crazy project, and bringing him as the big bad for this fight scene and then writing his death the way they do is so great. It's really phenomenal that he drowns in adamantium. And as far as we know, he's still dead. It wasn't a ruse. All three of the scientists are dead at this point. We do see him in a bunch of different flashbacks from modern stories. We're not going to cover them in detail, but we do see him in like Old Man Logan 21, Wolverine Exit Wounds, Wolverine Black, White, and Blood. And then we get him in X Lives of Wolverine. And Matt, do you want to tell us what this series is? It's a really fun Ben Percy ride.
This is the best story in Krakoa, and I will fight someone who disagrees with me. I think it's the best thing. It's Omega Red in Russia being sent through time to kill Wolverine or Professor X while Jean Grey and the Professor send Wolverine to fight him. It's this incredible, because it happens in time. Everything they do really happens. Jean Grey says, Professor and Jean Grey have a whole conversation where it's like, what are we going to do with time?
Omega Red becomes the midwife delivering Charles Xavier.
He becomes his wife as they lay together to have Akihiro. He was inside of Omega Red. There's no other way to read that than that Logan was inside Omega Red.
So there is one scene of Cornelius experimenting on Logan through all of this in X-Lives of Wolverine 4. You won't remember this. As I continue to study the limits and potential of your body, you'll be mind wiped daily. You're such a promising base ingredient, like hot steel before it's hammered into a blade, but I've noted some impurities. A closer examination of your blood has revealed some sort of contagion or parasite. He notices there's a symbiote in Wolverine's blood, which is a thing because Wolverine bonded with the symbiote back in Vietnam, basically. We'll get to that story another time. Before we root it out of you, I'm going to run a few experiments to better understand the anomaly. Do you mind? Of course you don't. And then he's possessed by Omega Red as part of this adventure. Omega Red possessed Dr. Cornelius during all of this, but he bounces out of his form and Cornelius gets to like a room and uses some sonics to like blast the symbiote off of Logan. The end. And then there's the Romulus of it all. But that's the end for Dr. Cornelius. What are your thoughts on Cornelius versus the symbiote? This poor man. Oh, no,
Matt,
poor man. This fucking asshole. Never mind.
Matt, what's the name of the symbiote? You said it wasn't Venom.
It's Venom is the name of the comic that he appears in.
Boo.
I like his design. I like the big swirly red face. That's
It's really funny to zoom in on the microscope and there's a bunch of tiny Venoms. That's really funny.
I do weekly episodes of my show. We could go to early Wolverine stories that are modern stories set in his prehistory, and I could do a full 4 to 6 months on my show just covering those stories. Well, one of them is the Venom Wolverine prequel. The rich interior world of Dr. Abraham Cornelius. This is a fascinating character in some ways. I fucking hate him, but I like the space that he occupies. One more insane Marvel mad scientist.
He gives off like dad who is not in contact with his children anymore, sitting alone with a TV dinner, watching TV and falling asleep in a lazy boy. That's the kind of energy that he gives me.
He gives me, if you guys have seen Breaking Bad, he gives me Walter White after he is like paid to have his identity. Like if you remember those in the later season, he gets to live, he escapes, but he has to live in a trailer in the middle of nowhere with like no contact with anyone. He's so sad and he just wants so badly to be relevant. And that big rant of like, I created you, Wolverine. You should be grateful for what I've done. Oh, fuck you, man.
The only thing he did, right? He has no other laurels to rest on other than making Wolverine. So he's trying to make...
You're a doctor. You should know what happens when you put hot metal in people's bodies.
Okay. He had to think that they were just killing a guy, right? When they didn't know he was a mutant. That is the thing that has always bothered me about the original story. What did you think was going to happen to just some guy?
I don't need to see this character back. I do think it's fun to ask the question, like, what story do we need? It would be fun to have, like, he has a child who wants to, like, do good in Wolverine's life because her dad was a fucking evil monster. Or it would be interesting to see, like, he created an AI version of himself who, like, ends up in, like, a Shiva unit and comes after Wolverine. So I think there's some fun things to do with him, but this is not a character I need to see again. I'm almost more interested in seeing Carol Hines back than I am Dr. Cornelius, because I think there's some interesting things for her, because we don't get that deeper exploration.
Same. The whole time I was like, okay, focus on Cornelius. And I was like, but what's going on with this bitch Carol Hines over here? She seems very... Why are you in this job? Why are you dealing with this bullshit?
Carol Hines is like 6 foot and like 110 pounds. She's kind of like a beanpole. And she has this like tightly short, like little Bob Brown hairdo. I think she's really interesting. She gives off kind of like June Cleaver vibes a little bit. I think she's really... I would love to do something.
You're just kind of like, why are you here? And that's an interesting question. Like, I know why Cornelius is here. I know why the professor's here. I totally get it. But I'm like, why are you here? I'm interested. Tell me more.
I love making these episodes because it solidifies storylines and character in my brain. And it's only when we talk about it that we see the possibility. So I'd love to, as we're wrapping up, hear any final thoughts you have about Dr. Abraham Cornelius. And then as we're wrapping up, where can people find you both online? And what would you like to plug for the end of February?
I think having had this conversation with you, with everybody, he's the worst of the three of easily, because he's the least committed to it. He's wishy-washy. By the end, he thinks he did it all, but there were two other people. There were many other people. He's just the fucking worst, and rest in peace. Rest in hell, dude.
If you're gonna be evil, fucking commit. You can find us at
Mojoverse Pod.
I can't remember if it was Escape.
Mojoverse okay. Pod on Blue Sky and Escape the Mojoverse on Instagram. I'm Matt Parent on Blue Sky, and Allison is
Allison Parent on Blue Sky.
That's so easy. Yay. You
Yay.
guys have a really fun energy. I really enjoy the interchange between you, and I hope to come on your show sometime. And I'd love to have
Please
you back
do.
on mine sometime. Gray Malkin Lane, you can follow Gray Malkin underscore Lane on Instagram. We're also Gray Malkin Lane on Blue Sky. And I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. The two of you are welcome to add me. Just ask. On the show for the next Patreon episode after this, you can find me, and we're delving into an early 70s mutant, little known, never associated with the X-Men, called the Gibbon. He's a really lame Spider-Man foe. He's a mutant. It's going to be a delightful recording. Out on the main show, watch for our script reading of X-Men 95, jumping into the new month. And in March, we're going to be celebrating the character John Proudstar, or Thunderbird. I'm featuring native voices and native talent through much of the month, and the trial at the end of the month will be called About John Proudstar, or About Thunderbird. So I'm really excited. I worked really hard on it, and it's going to be a wonderful series to put together. One of my goals on the Patreon this year is we're covering a lot of the crazy, but I also, as we're introducing new characters like Storm, Colossus, Wolverine, and Nightcrawler, I want to have some side episodes that explore characters around them. Matt and Allison, it was so wonderful to see you both. So great to meet you. I can't wait to hang out again. And
Yeah.
thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you learned some stuff and had a good time. And we'll see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon show. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. For over 3 months in 1940, the Nazis launched a massive aerial campaign over Great Britain, attempting to destroy the Royal Air Force and thus clear the way for an invasion on land. But the RAF held their ground in what has come to be known as the Battle of Britain, giving Hitler his first great military defeat. Over the next few years, Germany continually bombed London and other major cities, seeking to break British morale, requiring civilians to sacrifice and live in danger and chaos for months and months. Listen to my conversation with Paul Jenkins from last time for some real-world applications in that time's impact on his family personally. Over 40,000 civilians were killed during the course of these bombings, so it was a pretty big deal. We're going to jump to Captain Britain, numbers 20 through 27. We're getting a little ahead. We're doing Captain Britain stories on the show, but this was fun to read ahead. Believing his greatest foe to be dead, the Red Skull gathered his Nazi agents in Britain, and looking at a photo, a personal photo that he kept of Adolf Hitler, he vowed to conquer Britain. Then the Red Skull captured real-life Prime Minister James Callaghan, and he yells in his face, "For decades I have endured British stubbornness. I watched your unbending people resist the onslaught of the Wehrmacht and eventually defeat my beloved Führer. But no longer will our destiny be denied. Now victory will be ours." "You are mad," yells Callaghan. "If Hitler's army couldn't defeat us, what could you and your henchmen hope to accomplish? I will allow you to ponder that in the loneliness of a cell where the rabble you lead ponder my ultimatum. Surrender within 12 hours or face annihilation." Meanwhile, Captain Britain and Captain America have saved the kidnapped Jamie and Betsy Braddock from being tied to chairs in their rich White House. And they rush to fight back, but the Red Skull has loyal agents among the British populace. We also get a Captain Britain fun page here, by the way, where there is literally a maze to the mind of the Red Skull. There's just a swastika in the center, so it's a little maze. It's a big face of the Red Skull, and when you get to the center, it's just a swastika in the middle. It's on a Captain Britain fun page, which is crazy. So Captain Britain and Captain America once again attack the Red Skull, and rejoicing in watching them fight his armed men, "I'll allow you to live a bit longer to witness the utter defeat of this liberty-loving land, this land of fools who have always resisted the indescribable joys of tyranny." Holding both captains and the Prime Minister hostage, the Red Skull demands that Parliament surrender governmental control to him, threatening to set off a germ bomb inside of Big Ben if they don't. The heroes eventually narrowly stop the bomb from going off. There's a battle on Big Ben, which is the most British thing possible, and the Red Skull manages to teleport away to safety in the end. An oversimplified summary of a pretty fun story, but again, some very jarring real-world applications as well. Let me welcome one of my favorite people in the world, Robin Moffat, to talk about this crazy story. Robin, are you a Red Skull fan?
I wouldn't call myself a fan. I have to say, I appreciate that. One thing I do really enjoy about the Red Skull is taking something that is, especially historically, has been as terrifying as the Nazis and allowing characters like the Red Skull to exist that really lampoon them a successful way. I think it turns Nazis, which could be a very unsettling thing to have in comics, and makes it silly enough to fit into the universe, but also kind of removes it while still allowing us to ridicule and lampoon Nazi ideology. I like what the Red Skull represents and how we can take the piss out of that. I wouldn't say I'm a fan of him. I think he's a bit of a dickhead.
I love how he keeps just a little picture of Adolf Hitler on the wall. You pick like he
Oh my
kisses
God.
it goodnight before he goes to sleep. I don't know. It's what was
You
it like for you to jump
cannot.
into this crazy world?
Honestly, you cannot tell me that that's the only thing he does with that picture. Like, that man is homoerotic. His sexuality is Hitler, and it is concerning. I have always thought he was a little bit fruity. And then reading this comic from the 70s, I'm like, oh, that man's a homosexual. That's why he joined the party. He was like, I need to repress this. It was
Well,
weird. It was
when you read
really
his
weird.
origin, when you read his origin, Hitler sees a bellhop working in a hotel and was like, "There, that bellhop. He looks at me with such evil. I will make him the most evil man ever." It's very
Wait.
Liberace with like a young protege. So...
You are joking. That is
Oh,
not
I'm not
actually the
joking.
Red.
That's the real origin.
Oh my God, that is so unsettling. The idea, imagine going to a hotel in Germany and the Red Skull is your bellboy. Oh no, that's too much. I can't handle that.
This story obviously has a lot of crazy, silly, campy moments. Were there some things
Oh
that really
yeah.
stood out to you as like favorite moments? Outside of, I mean, let's be named the germ bomb in Big Ben.
Oh my God, the germ bomb was insane. The person from the government climbing the side of Big Ben, almost getting stuck on the hands of Big Ben, and then realizing, oh no, the arms of Big Ben are going to swing down and I'm going to fall to my death. And I'm like, did you not consider how clocks work? That's generally something that most of us understand about clocks. Like, this was the weirdest, most like soft sci-fi version of a James Bond film I have ever seen. It was fascinating. There's so many. Honestly, it is a fever dream. If you are listening to this and you have not read it, please just go and read this. It's on Marvel Unlimited. It is insanity. We could sit here for 3 hours and explain it, and you wouldn't quite understand just how bonkers the story is. It is fun. It's wild.
I'm tracking the Red Skull from story to story throughout this. It's truly insane, especially the early stuff. It's so silly, and then it gets so dark, you know? So he's kidnapped a prime minister. We keep talking about the real world applications of fascism, where there's very much, let's have the giant superhero fight over here to draw everyone's attention. Meanwhile, I have my secret agents doing this thing no one's paying attention to over there. It's very that, but it's a silly superhero story at the same time. People tied to chairs, no one actually dies, but it's fascism that they're fighting, which is a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's weird because, like you say, the way that the Prime Minister is kidnapped, it's not even like in a James Bond way where like agents come in and grab him. He literally just disappears in a puff of smoke. Like, it is really silly. But as you say, it's very much pulling on and riffing on very prescient concerns that unfortunately are just as relevant in 2025 as they have ever been. This story, I think, is fun because it sets at a good distance the aspects of this that are really concerning, lets us kind of just have fun with it. Because obviously, if you took everything in this story very seriously, not that many changes would have to happen for this to be like an actual sort of noir thriller tale, but it just sits on this like junction of superhero comics and noir thriller that is just silly. But yeah, it is really pulling on a lot of more concerning things, I would say.
I really enjoy watching straight porn sometimes if it's good. There was a straight porn movie I watched years ago. I wouldn't even know where to find this, but the plot line was there was like a madman who had put like a bomb that was going to go off and kill millions unless the really hot prime minister fucked a porn star on camera on BBC for everyone to watch. Plot line.
What in the was it the Red Skull? That's the
No,
only way that makes sense.
but the prime minister was really hot.
Oh my God, Dad. Jesus. I cannot say that I've seen that film. I'll maybe try and go and find it after
But now you're
this,
gonna go
but
look for it, I know
purely for research purposes, purely for research.
it. There's the real world application I opened with as well. Britain really fought hard and so many people died, and it was the place that the Nazis never took over. But here, the Red Skull's trying to tie up loose business from years ago. He's taken over governments wherever he can. So it's interesting to watch this guy not just fighting Captain America, but jumping around the world and trying to do these different
Yeah.
plot lines along the way.
I think just hearing you say that is really interesting because for anyone anyone who doesn't know, I studied German at university. When you study a language like German, it means that you, anytime I said to anyone over the age of like 40 what I was studying at university, I would get all sorts of stories about World War II. I've heard a lot of it from the older generation. And it was interesting
First of all, I'm over
because,
40, and fuck you for calling me the older
look,
generation.
I mean, I was like 19 when I started my university course. No, I was like 17 when I started my university course. So 40 to 17, that was an older generation.
No, go
I
ahead.
am almost 40. Right, I'm not going into it. I'm not going into it. So I've heard a lot of stories from people who have more direct experiences with World War II and Nazism. And one thing that's always very relevant, not relevant, one of the things that's always there is the way that National Socialism is determined to feel nostalgic for something that never really existed. And I think that actually that's what we're seeing in this story is the Red Skull is nostalgic for a conquered Britain, which had never actually happened. The Nazis never did that. But his ideology is so determined that that needs to happen that it almost feels like he's nostalgic for it. And in much the same way, Hitler was nostalgic for an ideal of Germany that had never actually existed, but he wanted to almost rewrite history. So it is interesting how there's that thread of, I guess, delusion in the core of that ideology. So it's really interesting that this story picks at that in a way that I think is probably not intentional, but is just, it's such a common beat in
Well, yeah,
that
the
fascist
quote that I
identity.
read where he says, "I'll allow you to live a little bit longer to witness the utter defeat of this liberty-loving land, this land of fools who have always resisted the quote, the indescribable joys of tyranny." Well, for who? Fuck you, man. Okay, so this is, I've done a few of these Red Skull stories now, more than 10. The truly most insane moment thus far, and maybe ever, I'll have to see because I'm doing them one at a time. The Captain Britain fun page. It's a Red Skull head maze, and you get to the middle of the maze, and it's just a little swastika that you find. This is for children. This is truly
Like, yeah,
crazy.
that is insane. But I guess that also does make sense because when you think about the demographic of, like, this was coming out, this was what, 1977,
Like,
I think it
yeah.
was. You're talking about people who, these are now the children of people who had gone off to war in World War II. So I think it actually does make a lot of sense that we're seeing that because there is that, it's that point where there's so much distance that you've got three generations of impact from this. And now it's at the point where it's like, well, we can be kind of silly with this. There's been so much, like, we are so far removed from that. We don't really have to take it as seriously anymore. So I can see how that's there. But given that the fascist ideology has just come right back round, it's kind of unsettling when you're going back to this in 2025 and going, oh God, how rose tinted it must have been to be there in 1977 and be like, oh yeah, my kids are doing a fun page with a swastika in the middle of it. Yeah, that's fine.
If
Strange.
we put your head on a Captain Britain fun page, what would be the single image in the center of your maze?
Oh God, right. Is it going to be a diamond for Emma Frost or is it going to be a little baby phoenix for Rachel Summers? It's going to be a little baby phoenix holding a diamond. There we go. Perfect.
We also got to see Rachel's girlfriend Betsy, who is clearly not a well-developed character here, because the Red Skull has just tied up like a telepath and an Omega-altering mutant in chairs in the background during the
Yeah.
story.
As soon as she popped up, I was just like, oh, okay. Oh, okay. She's a nothing character here. She is like, it is really fun. When we've been doing the Captain Britain read-throughs, we're seeing all these characters that have so much more dimension and sort of so much more dimension and so much more interiority to them. But when you're going back to these very early stories, it is just fascinating. And obviously there's the whole, how does that fit in? She's a telepath. She should be able to do something about this. But like, you just put that to the side. It's weird. It's really
The
weird.
last thing I'll mention here, and we'll play up on this more in future episodes, but we get to see Captain Britain and Captain America working together, right? It's a representation of the Allied forces. If we can all work together, we can triumph over Nazism together, right? So that's one of the themes that we see explored here as well. I don't know if you had any thoughts on this team up before we wrap up.
So I think what's interesting is that positioning them together actually kind of highlights the ways that they're different. Because for me, I've always kind of just thought of them. I think I've said this before, Captain Britain, when you are Scottish, he doesn't really represent my country because I see my country as Scotland, not Britain. So he's always felt like, oh, that's, he's Captain England, basically. He's for another country. Watching the, so I kind of just think of Captain Britain, Captain America, they're the same. When I see them together, I see the ways in which they actually are very different because Captain Britain, with his like secret identity, he pulls a lot more from similar experience to Spider-Man. So it's really interesting to see a Captain America figure, but with the Spider-Man backstory. I think it's really interesting the way that they play together. Obviously, you've got the allegory to the Allied forces, but then I'm like, well, can we get a little Captain France in here? Like, there's so many more characters that we should be seeing, but of course, it's British and American comics, so we're just going to see these.
And it's more of a modern read to understand that America and Britain, because these are two men dressed in flags who are, blonde white guys who have certain statuses of privilege. Brian Moore than Steve Rogers, of course. But both countries being colonialists who have kind
Oh,
of
of
had
course.
fascist turns in recent years and kind of have always been there. So, colonialism versus fascism isn't a great read, but it's what existed at the time. So it's an interesting view. Any final thoughts, Robin Moffat?
My final thoughts are, if you have not already and you're listening to this, please go and read this story. It is bonkers. As Chad and I have discussed, it does pull on and obliquely reference a lot of much more serious themes. But at the end of the day, this is just a really fun and silly story. And I think that, especially in this era that we're currently living in, sometimes having a little bit of distance, but still being able to take the piss out of things that are genuinely quite scary can be a way to feel a little bit more powerful in this world. So please go and read it and just enjoy a Nazi being an absolute shithead. You deserve it.
At the very least, go look up the Captain Britain fun page.
Oh
All
my God.
right, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you, Robin Moffat. We'll see you back
Thank you.
next time for the next installment.